This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
It's time to tee it high and let it fly on the Tee Florida.
I demand satisfaction.
On the Champa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network. Live from the 19th Hole Studios inside Ferg's Sports Bar and Grill.
How about a Prescott?
Bringing you the week's coverage of all things golf.
He's got to be pleased with Dad.
From PGA to NCAA. And now...
Well, we're waiting.
Let's tee off with Mike Rickard, Oscar Gamer, and John Rieger.
Welcome back to hour number two on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connections on the Tee Florida. I'm Mike Rickard, John Rager up there on St. Augustine Beach, and Bill Butner in the house. And of course, Tom Gribben, Kerry McNally, kind enough to spend some time with us for an hour, and always bringing entertainment and off the wall commentary, if you will. If you take a look at that leaderboard right now at the East Lake, at the tournament championship and the FedEx. I've still got Scottie Scheffler sitting there at 11 under. You got that in front of you there, John Rager?
Nine.
Yeah, let me go ahead and refresh this thing and see what he's got. Right now I have, Colin Morikawa now is at 10 under par with his 9 under round 61 today. And he's also tied with Keegan Bradley, who shot a 7 under par 63. And Victor Hovland is tied for the lead with his 2 under par 68 today. So Scotty has fallen down to fourth place. So he shot one over par today. So he dropped back a shot, and the hole. And Adam Shank is just one shot behind him at 63. So you start looking at the leaderboard. A lot of movement early up and down the board in today's round at the Tour Championship. So the weather has been a factor up there too. You know, we always start out with the Wild Bill weather golf report. So I checked out the Atlanta weather, and so Wild Bill's Golf Weather Report is brought to you by Yank and Crank, which is extreme fine fish and fashion, and I look at it, it feels like 102 up there, and the humidity is pretty high. It's actually higher than it is right now in St. Petersburg, Florida, so I think that the commentary today was that Scotty battled a little bit with the heat, but they all had to do the same thing, so I'm looking for maybe a little bit cooler temperatures. They haven't had any rain. Not a whole lot of rain forecast up there, so it's just going to be hot and dry. Greens will dry out and get faster. So with that, feels like 102. Humidity's pretty high up there in Atlanta, about 70%. So with that, that's Wild Bill's Golf Weather Report brought to you by Yank and Crank, extreme fine fishing fashion.
So Victor Hovland at 10 under, along with Morikawa. So that's a good pick, my friend.
It's very interesting that the leader that gets set up at 10 under shoots one of the very few over par rounds, which I don't understand. Obviously, he's a great player. Obviously, he's playing the same golf courses these guys are playing that are 61, 63. Most of them are one to three under par. So I don't know what Scotty did that caused that problem.
Well, Roy McIlroy, who I thought possibly with a back issue, he played well today. I mean, he played even. He's only three off the pace. So we've got three great days of golf. I mean, even Brian Harman, he's only sitting four back. And anybody within five, I think easily, Bill, is in the hunt.
No, this day and age, everybody can shoot so low that it's just
hence last week with the BMW.
Yeah, Jason Day can go low. Sam Burns, all these guys can go low to the point where, if they get an early start and they get out before the weather, or they get fresh greens or whatever it is, they can shoot 60 and get back into contention very quickly.
I would love to see Ricky Fowler. Ricky sits five off the pace. To see Ricky Fowler come back and win this tournament, I don't think his point accumulation. I don't believe he would he'd win the cup, but he'd certainly win this tournament, and that would be great for the game of golf. And I guess as we look at this winding down this weekend, then we'll start focusing our energy on conversation on the Ryder Cup.
Actually, Mike, I'm glad you brought that up, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes there. But, the Ryder Cup does play into this. And this tournament, even though that some of these players aren't going to win the tournament because they're just a little too far back and they may not factor in on Sunday, they're still factoring in for the Ryder Cup. They had an interview with our friend Alex Maselli earlier this week that we've had on the Tee Golf Radio. And Alex is a writer for Sports Illustrated, and he had an interview with Rory and some of the other players this week, but primarily with Zach Johnson. And Zach says he's got up to 20 different people that he can pick, and all of them is his picks except two are playing in Atlanta right now at the Tour Championship. So how they play, like Ricky Fowler and several others that aren't automatically on the team and need a pick are playing, and how they perform will, I think, play into his picks there. And the only two I believe that aren't playing this weekend are Brooks Koepka and Justin Thomas. So those two aren't in the tournament. It's going to be interesting to see on Monday at Frisco, Texas, home of the PGA of America, Zach Johnson scheduled for a late morning press conference, and he'll go ahead and announce his captain's pick, and off we go to the Ryder Cup.
How, you know, Bill Butner, we discussed this while you were on the road. My friend Mark Egli, who in the early years of Zach Johnson's career was instrumental in a lot he did, working with him when he was at Drake University, and he'd come home, return, and Mark would help him with his game. And we said that, unfortunately, because he's well-grounded, Zach Johnson, how difficult no other captain has had to make decisions like this, because there was never any LIV in the equation. There was no other body that they had to make decisions on whether to accept him. And there's a lot of emotion involved. There's a lot of the details on how you make the team, how they accumulated points over the course of the year, because they're not getting any points for the LIV participation. So very difficult challenge ahead of Zach, and it's, you know, just a couple of days away from making this tough choice for the remaining members of the 2023 Ryder Cup in Italy.
Well, here's some insight too on this. Want to give you guys some insight on this is that the Ryder Cup is owned and operated jointly by the PGA, not the PGA Europe, but the European Tour and the PGA of America. And so just because you're the PGA champion didn't automatically get you on the Ryder Cup team in years past. I was kind of shocked to find out that it was like three or four PGA champions that did not get picked for the Ryder Cup, but it had a lot to do with the fact, the timing of it. So John Daly didn't get picked for the Ryder Cup because he won the PGA Championship, late in the year, and he didn't get picked. You know, they didn't have as many captain picks at that time. It was mainly on points, and they only had two picks. So a lot of that's going to play in for the Ryder Cup, since you do have six picks. And the European team doesn't pick their pick till next week sometime, so they're still operating on their points list. But they do know that Rory, McIlroy, John Rahm, and Victor Hovland are all automatic picks because of their point standing. But there's still three more out there on the European team, and Tyrell Hatton and Tommy Fleetwood, that they're leading in the points. So just like Zach Johnson is going to have some big decisions to make, so is Luke Donald going to have to make decisions on the other side of the pond, and he's going to get to do his next week after the American team is selected.
Yeah, I was going to say it's changed because you have more picks. It used to be, like you said, two picks, and that was always controversial, but you always had one that was somewhat a lock, and then the other one was something. But now, I mean, because of the politics, because of the number of picks, it is wide open as to which way he's going to go with this.
Yeah, I'd be shocked, Bill. What do you think? I'd be shocked if he didn't pick Brooks Koepka. I mean, Brooks, he's played well this year, and he's played well in the majors, and, second in the Masters, and win the U.S. Open, and, I mean, the PGA Championship. Wyndham Clark won the U.S. Open, but winning the PGA Championship, and just, I think I'd be shocked if Zach Johnson did not pick him. I don't think Zach will pick any other live golfer, but you kind of got to pick Brooks, I think. And just like several players have come out, like Scottie Scheffler, who said that, hey, listen, you got to pick the best team. You got to pick the best players that you think you can win the Ryder Cup, regardless of the tours.
And again, by definition, it's basically American golfers. So why Brooks, whether it be live, whatever tour he plays on, he has to be chosen, I would think.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
But that was also the call last night for the Rays game in the ninth inning.
Wasn't that horrible?
Was that the worst call ever?
That was
a guaranteed call that went the other way.
And I haven't heard any commentary after. I haven't been approved.
Well, when you watch it was clearly wrong. But I don't know At some point,
how could they not see what we saw?
At some point, his toe was on the bag, so I don't know when the ball arrived. They never showed the full thing. They just showed.
They showed when the ball arrived and his foot was.
John Rager doesn't know what we're talking about.
I know.
Give him an update.
Well, we had a little situation. Like
that's where Ferg, right across from Tropicana Field. We need that.
The worst call I've ever seen.
We had a single
game winning.
Well, first of all, we had a single that drove in two runs. And we've now tied the game
bottom of the ninth,
and it's getting exciting. All of a sudden, we got bases loaded again, and I guess Paredes hits a ground ball deep to shortstop, and he's got to back up a little bit, and he makes a little wild throw
to
the side, and he got pulled off the bag. And for all intents and purposes, they challenged the call, and it did not go their way, so they did not win it in the ninth. They had to win it in the tenth.
And it was very clear there was about 2-inch difference.
Oh, way more than 2 inches. Yeah. It was way more than 2 inches. You could see the dirt between there, John. And it was, had it been called safe, the game was over in bottom of the ninth. And they reviewed it. And of course, everybody's acting like, oh, well, as soon as they see this, the game's over. And they came out and upheld
that could happen with Brooks Koepka. They could avoid Brooks Koepka and it'd be the same thing. You've got to be kidding me.
I'm predicting they're going to pass on Brooks.
I wouldn't be surprised.
But there's so many guys on the PGA right now that have stepped up and had incredible years. John Rager, to take a look at sliding them might be a tough call for Zach. I mean, one LIV player.
I'm not saying he should. I'm just guessing they're going to pass on Brooks. They're not going to select them.
Well, yeah, that is, Tom, I tell you what, it's very interesting. I think that you do have a valid point there that they might do that. I know that if I had the privilege of serving as the president of North Florida PGA twice, once in the 90s and then 2009-11, and I've always been, I wasn't a renegade, but I was never one of the officers out there in the PGA that would go ahead and just go along with the company line and in the good old boys club. I like to shake it up a little bit, and I think that you're going to find that there's several thousand PGA members. You know, Bill and I are PGA members. There's probably about 20,000 of us out there around the country, and there's some folks like myself that might be offended if they didn't pick Brooks, just because I want to make sure we have the best team and not get the politics all involved with it. And at the same time, you know, there's probably half of our PGA members don't want Brooks picked because they just want it to be the PGA Tour and go with that. And it will be interesting. Especially, it will be controversial either way.
Yes, and especially it'd be different if we're a couple of years into this. But this is the first year somebody's going to draw a line. I just, you know, and it'd be very controversial because Brooks has certainly earned it. But I just have a feeling that then if the deal was more settled between the PGA and LIV,
and it's far from that.
If it was, and since it's not, I just have this feeling that the good faith is not going to be there, and they're going to it'll be interesting.
And I was fortunate enough to be at the LIV event, whatever, a couple of weeks ago up at Trump.
Describe that to
me. Oh, it's a different feeling altogether. I mean, obviously, when I played, it was all off, you know, first tee, 10th tee, you had starting times. It was, you know, practice was going on the putting green.
We're all drinking beer and wearing shorts.
Oh, yeah. That was a gallery, all right.
And the music playing that loud? Was that prevalent?
When I showed up for this event, the music was blaring. I mean, it was 2 hours, 2.5 hours before tee time because it was a 1:15 shotgun. So when I got there at 10 o'clock, it was like blaring music of announcing. There's a public announcer. Hey, we got this going on. We got that going on. It seemed like an outing to me. It seemed like that there was a
great fundraiser.
A carnival, yeah.
And the NFL Super Bowl of golf.
And then they announced that they were this guy's on the practice tee and this guy's on the putting green. And it was like, you know, just a circus kind of atmosphere. And
did you see David Faraday?
I did not. I was looking for David. But I did not run into him. I did run into a few other characters, to say the least.
Anyone you want to name drop?
Caitlyn Jenner.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I remember when Caitlyn was a hell of a decathlete at the Drake Relays. I met Caitlyn then, too. But I didn't know it was going to be Caitlyn.
But they got in their carts at 1 o'clock, and it would look like a normal, again, as a college golf coach, that's what we did every every week. We've got a shotgun and we got them all out in carts, and that's what happened. But to the LIV's credit, the golf course was tremendous. Really hard, really challenging, and you did not win or play well by chance. You had to play golf. And so it does. I thought that this tour was all about playing marginal golf courses. It played a real golf course, and it was a real challenge for these
guys. It's set up nicely.
I mean, set up, yeah. Phenomenal.
So what about that track, John, and you know this, the track that that Bryson DeChambeau shot that phenomenal 58. Is that a tough track?
Well, the Greenbrier has been known to shoot low scores. The tour goes there.
Gotcha.
And they've shot 59 there.
Okay, so that's not that unusual. It's not it's not an incredible feat.
No.
Stuart Appleby, I think, shot 59 there at Greenbrier 1 year. It does produce a lot of low scores. But, you know, anytime you, if you think about it, you can get the four of us on the first tee tomorrow at St. Pete Country Club, and, you know, we'd play a scramble and be hard-pressed to shoot 59 if we played the tips and the rough was grown up a little bit and the greens were fast.
Well, if that happened, I'd have to get new guys on my team, man. You guys can't shoot better than that. And I'm not driving the cart.
Oh, that's true. But Patty better be there with a drink. Tell you that. Yeah. I miss Patty, by the way.
Well, I'm not a Hall of Fame cart jockey, so I'd make sure your carts are cleaned up and take good care of you guys.
Can I guess why my cup is empty?
Because Patty's not here.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah. That's why you're drinking water.
Comes back and he's complaining already. That typical pro. He
showed up last week. What do you mean he came back? He ought to be complaining.
Yeah, he certainly should. I appreciate him even being here and talking to me today.
Hey, Mike, for listeners out there, just about 15 minutes, we're going to announce the unbelievable connection at On the Tee Florida Golf has with Roy McIlroy. And about 6:45, 6:50, we should reveal that to everybody.
We've had a lot of comments about it here at Ferg's about they're on this edge of the seat trying to figure it out.
Well, they're going to be on the edge of the seat when I share my story from Cherry Hills here shortly, too. But I was looking at that leaderboard, and Keegan Bradley now sharing the lead. Three guys on top there, Bill Buttner on the top. Colin Morikawa, another 61 shot today after Victor's last week. Victor sits at 10 under, and Keegan Bradley 10 under. And he's kind of had a resurgence this year, Bradley.
Yeah, I'd say Keegan is...
I like that cat, except for he's a big Patriot fan.
Well, he's really changed his putting a lot, and so he's... Obviously, putting's the key. These guys can flat hit the golf ball. They hit long. They hit a lot of greens. But making putts is the do or die.
And that's what happened to Brian Harman this year. That's happened to Lucas Glover. Yeah. I mean, both of their games, when examined by guys like yourselves and the pundits on the air, they state that right away. And when they do the interview with these guys, they say, you know, in their 30s and 40s, they're figuring it out with the putter, and that's key. And Adam Scott kind of did the same thing for a while, too.
And you got to wonder what Justin Thomas is doing. Justin Thomas is going south, and I'm assuming his putting is, I don't know what the stats look like, but I'm assuming they're not too good this year.
And John Rahm, his putter's been going south on him as of late. His game has, essentially, but today, you know, he shot one under, and he sits three out the pace. So I never give up, and I know you like John Rahm. The Spaniard's a grinder. And he's pissed off about this format enough that he might just make a statement on the next 3 days and win it. And he has enough points. He would win both.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's obviously very talented, very strong. He can shoot the low scores that anybody can shoot. It's just a matter of getting the putter right, getting the momentum going, and it all works.
You're listening, Alan.
Hey, I don't know about you guys, but I'm just dying to hear about Mike's travel tales. Just to lead into that, On the Tee Florida Golf, you know, we have quite a bit of social media that gets posted each week, whether it's the John Rager Report or whether it's Mike's travel tales of when he went to the U.S. Amateur. But if you visit us on Facebook, X now, it used to be called Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, if you hashtag On the Tee Florida, On the Tee Florida Golf, or hashtag John Rager Report, and I also include all of our personalities hashtags in there, you can read some interesting things. And one of the most interesting things I caught on social media this week was Mike Rickard's travel tales to the U.S. Amateur in Denver, Colorado, Cherry Hill. So, Mike, take it away and tell us what happened out there.
Well, these shenanigans are brought to you by our good friends at Michelob Ultra, Superior Light Beer and Proud Sponsor of all things at golf at Ferg's 19th Hole Clubhouse Studios, and of course our good friends at Ice Pick Vodka. So here it is, fellas. I went out there for a planned 5-day family activities I had to take care of, and I've got a lot of family out there, and got there Thursday, and I'd completely forgotten that the U.S. Amateur was right there at Cherry Hills in Denver, in Inglewood. And I did notice when I got off the flight, there was a lot of guys carrying their clubs and golf theme. And I'm assuming they're just golfers that wanted to come out and see that and then go hit one of the tracks in the area. There's some beautiful courses out there, as you're well aware of, Tom. And so did the family thing, got to see the grandson. I'm excited. My son and girlfriend went up to the mountains, and I had about half a day to kill some time myself. And I'm listening to the sports channel, and they mentioned something about the event. And I thought, you know what? The hell with it. I'm getting in that event somehow. So I had this exact same, you know, hat and shirt, my swag on, and I have my card, and I had a rental car with California plates. So there was a lot of legitimacy just from an appearance perspective. And I had my nice little, I was going to go to a coffee shop, and I had this baby that has the Principal Charity Classic on it. I look like a true media guy, and you guys know that I'm not. But anyway, so I pulled to the front. They're all volunteers at these events. And I said, hey, could you tell me where I missed the turn. Where's the media trailer at? And he said, oh, yeah. He said, I'll tell you what. He said, it's very difficult to find just for you guys. We don't put a sign on it. He said, you go out back out here, take a right and a quick right. Well, it's about the size of a golf cart. I mean, going through some shrubbery, and I get through there, and there's a kid waiting. He goes, hey, media. And he pulls me all the way to the front. I parked the rental car, and he says, there's the trailer right over there. Well, I'm not going near that trailer, you know. But I did tell the guy at the front, I did, this was a big white lie. I said, I'm looking for the Golf Week guys. I said, Lance Ringler is a good friend of mine. He said, well, just go to the trailer. So I walk right by, and I thought, I'm gonna run, wear this as long as I can. Here comes a kid in a cart. Give you a ride up to the clubhouse? I said, you bet. So he gives me a ride up along 18, and I get dropped off at the top, and I thought, well, here we go. You're in. So do something with it. And so he asked me, hey, you want to go in the hospitality tent? Why don't I have a lanyard on? I'm not pushing that one. So I stay away from it for a period of time. I go over to the swag shop. I'm shopping around a little bit, and I turn around. I run into this lady. I'm like, boom. And I'm sorry, and she's got First Tee of Denver. Becky, her name escapes me right now. And I said, yeah, I have a little radio show. I said, we work with James Poulter, Chichi Rodriguez, you know, that, yep. Clearwater. And of course, the guy, Rick in the game down here. And I said, she said, well, come on over. I want to show you something. Takes me over by the pool, and it was a really cool setup. It'll be on social media tonight. They had the pool. The country club pool, and they had an island out there, and then the kids are hitting balls in the island, and they had a lifeguard that was grabbing the balls, and just an entire setup, and they're working with these inner city kids. So that was really cool. Well, she then became my unofficial hostess, taking me around and showing me people, invite me to stop here and there.
Hey, John, you really want to hear how this story ends?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm just on pins and needles up here on the beach right now.
I did not get that.
Does it include handcuffs?
No. I got to see the 18th hole finish, and I'm sitting in an Adronic, whatever. How do you say that? Adronic chair?
Whatever.
The beach chairs. Sat underneath a elm tree, having a cold Coors Light, watching 18. It was superb and made my day.
And that's how it ends.
And match that one.
There you go.
Creativity and BS got me in there, but I tell you what
the best part was the parking.
The best part was getting on the golf cart with the kid.
Yeah.
And then I find out that Peyton Manning's a member there, John Elway, Mike Shanahan, Sir Charles Barkley during the NBA championships. He made an appearance. They said he was just the greatest guy in the world. And just a fun time was had by all. And there was, the galleries were minimal on Thursday and Friday, and then they picked up for the weekend.
Did you see anybody from your media side that you were looking for?
No, I avoided them.
Oh.
Yeah. But Nick Dunlop, a 19-year-old student from Alabama, he was the winner on Sunday. But man, there's some talent coming up. I'll tell you right now, in the ranks, we're talking freshmen and sophomores.
Should have hit the hospitality tent. You should have gone for it. I mean, they wouldn't have thrown you.
I wimped out, man. I should have gone in there. Rager said he would have been there and not seen anything. You said you'd be throwing down the coldies and introducing yourself to everybody.
Yeah.
We don't need no stinking badges.
Exactly.
Hey, but what a cool place to go. And you mentioned that your favorite live golfer, Bryson DeChambeau, was there earlier in the week.
Oh,
and actually recreated Arnold Palmer's shot on the first tee that when Arnold Palmer won the U.S. Open at Cherry Hills in 1960.
Yeah, I'm telling the club that he used.
Well, he used a persimmon wood, and I think he drove it pin high, just like Arnie did, drove it on the green in 1960 to set off the his 65 and 1960 U.S. Open Championship. But, you know, Bryson, for listeners out there, yeah, I always rib Mike about live golf and this, that, and the other, but Bryson was a previous U.S. amateur champion.
And his picture right alongside the greats, Bobby Jones. I think it was my son. I showed him the pictures, and he didn't know the history of amateur golfers, the pros, and he said, "Well, Bobby Jones, Pops, he won this thing 6 or 7 times." I said, "Well, that was before they had the PGA. And I mean, those events were the elite events, right, Bill?"
Oh, big time. Those are very, I mean, back in the day, there were very few events. It took the states to kind of organize and everything. But the U.S. Open, U.S. Amateur was the creme. I mean, it was the one you were looking for. It's like the Masters for a professional side.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, the ones that I got introduced to later in amateur golf was obviously the North-South Amateur, the Sonny Hanna, the Porter Cup, the Transmiss, the Southern Am, the Northeast Am. There were a lot of terms that hence have come from all these other events happening in the States.
And the PGA pros back in the day, John Rager, were, you know, the Walter Hagens in the world were kind of frowned upon. That was kind of an LIV period during that time. I guess you could make some comparisons, right?
Yeah, I was going to say the pros were not invited into the clubhouses. They were kind of non-respected.
Yeah, they're gamblers.
Yeah.
Walter Hagen certainly was.
Gambler.
I love his history. I mean, that cat was, he had the ladies with him, the cocktails, the cigs going while he's hitting the balls, and he was just an entertainer. And that's a little bit about like LIV at this point.
Well, it's interesting, you know, when you start looking at the LIV and the PGA Tour, you know, the PGA Tour actually became the PGA Tour in its entirety because of Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, who wanted to play for more money and, you know, wrestle control of the tournaments from the PGA of America in 1968. They were the ones to lead the breakoff. So when, you know, modern-day people forget the history, where now you have Bill Mickelson and a few others that, you know, broke away with the Live Golf Tour. You know, don't know where that's going to head down the road, but it's not as what you think it is if you look back at the history. But, yeah, you know, the other thing, too, about old golf, I remember when I was director of golf at the Bloomingdale Golfers Club, I wore plus fours every day to work. You know, I did it as a stunt for our media day, and we opened the course. My mentor, Bobby Strickland, decided, hey, we need to wear those every day to work, so I did. And but one of the sets of clubs, I was on the National Wilson staff, was they used to own the Walter Hagen line. And so I've got a set, I still have it in my garage, of Walter Hagen golf clubs. So I had the knickers.
Can we hang those up in the clubhouse? Can we hang those up in the clubhouse?
Well, I'll let you hang one up because, you know, I mean, I want to make sure that the museum gets first dibs on it. That was a joke.
I got it.
Hey, you know what? It's about getting time. You know, do we want to talk about, do you need to go commercial break, or do we want to talk about Roy McIlroy and Ferd's 19th hole clubhouse?
Let's take a break. We'll come back and with this this riveting teaser that you for an hour and 45 minutes have kept our audience at bated breath. We'll be back here on the Tee Florida from the 19th hole clubhouse studios above Ferg's Sports Bar and Grill, downtown St. Petersburg, across from Tropicana Field.
18 holes never felt so good. We're on the tee from the 19th hole studios at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill on the Champa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Berg Sports Bar and Grill, serving Champa Bay for 29 years, voted the Bay's best wings and sports bar, located across from Tropicana Field, is your sports headquarters and private party destination. Weekly live music, axe throwing, dog park, Rays Bucks and Lightning watch parties, every game and 95 televisions to guarantee your favorite team's games are always on. Berg Sports Bar and Grill, Champa Bay's iconic sports and party headquarters.
On the Tee Florida, Florida's fastest growing premier golf and entertainment show has now moved to Thursday nights from 5 to 7, providing more golf entertainment and inside information from PGA to LPGA, LIV, NCAA, high school, and local events. A show for scratch golfers and fun-loving hacks. Two pros, John Rieger and Bill Butner, sharing PGA Golf Tour insights and tips, along with the hack Mike Rickard, head of the Hack Nation, inserting Caddyshack humor with our talented entertainment team of Carrie McNally, Tom Gibran, and Ice Pick Vodka Cocktail Queen and Cart Girl, the talented Patty Suzette. Tune in to On the Tee Florida, Thursdays from 5 to 7 from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill 19th Hole Clubhouse and Ice Pick Vodka Studios for a chance to win golf passes, swag, Rays Bucks Rowdies tickets, and Ferg's Full Swing Simulator passes. That's On the Tee Florida on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network, streaming on Florida Sports Stream and RadioSt.Pete.com. Tee it high and let it fly with On the Tee Florida and Ice Pick Vodka.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We're on to the next hole. And on the tee from the 19th Hole Studios at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill on the Champa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network.
Welcome back as we wind things down on the Tee Florida. Tom Gribben sitting to my right and Bill Butner, one of the pros, John Rieger up in St. Augustine, Florida. Carrie McNally had a little family thing, but we've had a great show for the last hour and 45 minutes. And we'll wind down. I'll go over some of the notables at East Lake. That leaderboard, as I mentioned, Colin Morikawa, Keegan Bradley and Victor Hovland all sit on top at 10 under after day one. Scotty Scheffler, one back. My man, Adam Schenck. And let's see, Rory McIlroy's three back, seven under. John Rahm tied with Rory. Guys that I think can make a move here, Bill. I'm looking at, you know, and even a Brian Harman is obviously accustomed now to the majors, to the pressure, and has performed. The guys I'd like to see, Ricky Fowler, he's five back. He's sitting in 14th. And, you know, when you watch the coverage is going to be quick because it's only 30 guys.
That's true. It's interesting that the leaders started today at 10 under. And the lead is at 10 under. Whether you started at 8, 7, 6, but they all found a way to get to that number. So I don't know what that says other than the fact that the 10-shot lead over some people is good, but people will catch you.
Well, maybe, you know, Scotty, I mean, that's a lot of pressure. I anticipate all the chalk in Vegas was on Scotty, given that delta that he had to start out with, ranked number one in the world. Everything is in his favor. Not to say that he's going to, you know, crumble today, but you know, this was a great opportunity for him to make some distance between the rest of the field.
I just think starting out at 10 under, it's hard to shoot 61 or 62. You're teeing off last. You've got the lead. You're thinking a lot. It's very rare that you would see somebody like that, you know, being in the last group, shoot such a low number. But you're right. Had he shot 68, 67, he could have kept his lead.
Let me ask you this, both you guys, in non-PGA events, or have you played an event that was multiple days, and you ever sat on a lead or close to the lead, and changed your entire mentality for the final day?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the lead, unfortunately,
to protect it instead of getting aggressive. I mean,
your mind thinks money, your mind thinks position, your mind thinks so many other things that you know, you get away from what you did the first two or three days.
And I'll call on Nicholas, made a career out of that thinking.
Thank you. Tiger made a pretty good career out of it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tiger, when he sat on that lead, he played to not lose. essentially. Am I right?
That is correct. Yeah, he
and he was a master at it.
I've seen Jack pull out that 3-wood on the, you know, when he's got a 3-stroke lead, not pulling out that driver. And I used to, when I was a kid, I was going, come on, you know, Arnie, he always would be out there with the driver.
Yeah, Jack knew percentages. He knew how to play according to his strengths and let everybody else either fall by the wayside or.
It seemed to work though, didn't it, Bill?
It did,
just a little bit.
And Tiger was even more impressive with the lead.
Speaking of Tiger, Mr. Rager and Ben Bill, you think we'll see him in competitive play at all ever again, or this is it?
Wow, I'm gonna let you know.
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, we've written him off before with his injuries and things like that, but this one's pretty serious, and you can kind of tell that I'm not sure. If he doesn't want to play ceremonial golf like he said Arnie did or Jack did later in their careers, but I'm not so sure. I think Tiger's involved with a lot of other business interest things, and some of it has to do with Ferg's 19-hole clubhouse too. So when we get to that, I'll tell you about his relationship with us also.
Yeah, I think Tiger is done as far as competitive golf. He doesn't want to do he'll do the father-son. He'll do the things. Obviously, his big thing right now is his son and getting his son ready to get into the next level.
And playing with him, sharing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not going to see him out like he was.
So he's going to take the role of Earl with Charlie in his career.
That would be a good way of looking at it.
Yeah. And he probably won't mentor him the same way that Earl did, who was kind of a very controlling man.
Yes, we'll say
and the kid won't win like Tiger either.
Exactly. But he won't have as much. He probably won't. He'll try to keep the pressure off of him, but that's impossible.
Yeah, hey, look at him. He'll have the same amount of chicks.
Yeah, yes, he will. And he won't have a worry in the world with Pop's empire to have any of the financial pressure.
Me, yeah, the boat.
Exactly, the boat.
Yacht.
Yes. So you've been keeping everybody on pins and needles, John Rager. So why don't we get to this?
Now's the time.
I think that I know the answer to this, but I don't want to blow it. And I think I have close ties to where this story's going. But why don't you go and take it away?
Well, for our listeners out there, and Bill brought this up, and you brought this up, Mike, as far as what Tiger is going to do in the future. Is he going to play competitive golf or not? And actually, he's involved with the TGL Golf League, and basically TGL is a virtual golf league. It's going to be played in Palm Beach. It's going to be inside a arena, and it's going to have a giant video screen on it and golf holes set up inside the arena. And it's going to be on Monday nights. So just like this past year, we've had Monday night golf leagues. We have our Monday night football coming up, but they're going to play Monday nights where people will actually watch. And Tiger's heavily involved with this, and they're actually selling team franchises. There are going to be 6 teams and 3 professionals on each team. And there's teams that have been purchased, meaning that Arthur Blank, who founded Home Depot and the Atlanta Falcons owner, he bought a team for Atlanta, the Serena and her sister Venus. They bought a team for Los Angeles. And the Fenway Sports Group bought the TGL team for Boston. And so they're out there selling teams, and it's a team format and event. And here's the connection. Here's the connection between Tiger and Rory and all of them is obviously the technology that they're going to be using for this is pretty spectacular. Now, it's going to be a giant screen, like 40 feet by 60 feet or something. It's going to be like almost like a Jumbotron that they'll actually hit golf balls into. So it's a giant golf simulator. And the company that the TGL and the PGA Tour has selected, Tiger has selected to be their technology provider and provide those big screens is Full Swing, which is our technology provider for our golf simulator.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So Monday night,
will they be able to play the other courses like Pebble and like on our simulator?
They're going to do something very similar to that, but it's going to be giant. It's going to be a big screen in an arena. So what's going to happen Monday nights at Ferg's and the 19-hole clubhouse will be a combination of our golfers messing around and hitting golf balls and playing on our simulators, but on all the screens in the clubhouse, you're going to have the TGL league going on Monday nights. This is going to happen starting in January after football season. So there is a connection between Kurt, Tiger, Roy, and the TGL League with the Full Swing simulators.
And my boys down here playing the league.
You know, you're going to get a lot of athletes, the Tom Brady types and everything, getting teams in this league. You know, like Serena, like he's saying.
And like they've done with pickleball.
Now, this is something ironic, though. You know, ironically, though, with Rory, you know, he's heavily involved as, you know, the unofficial spokesman for the PGA Tour when going through the LIV Golf controversy and this, that, and the other. But here he is breaking off to do something just like LIV Golf. It's a team event. It's a team environment, just like LIV Golf's trying to create teams. They're creating teams. And so you never say never sometimes. And you know, I think Rory's best bet at this point is to stay out of the politics of things and focus on new and exciting ways to format the game of golf and play the game of golf, and this certainly is one of them.
Well, when you take a look at the diversity of all of these guys anymore, you know, here we were trying to break down the days of Bill Buttner and guys driving their own car. I mean, the evolution, Bill, has just got to blow you away that these guys are their own corporations, if you will. They've got their team. They've got enormous amounts of money coming here, $18 million to the winner this weekend. And that's chicken feed compared to what LIV's sending this way. The purse is $59.7 million. So all of these things, when you take a look at them, have been an incredible evolution of when you played on it. Did you ever see it? Do you ever see the game getting this successful and this beneficial for the PGA pros?
Well, I was going to say, when I saw the LIV Tour and I saw what they did and what they do and their teams that are there, the help, the caddies were just extraordinary, but their coaches were there. They worked on so many different things. They worked on alignment. They worked on tempo. They worked on so many things that, you know, as a player, that's what you had to work on by yourself. Up at this level, there's so many people involved.
You know, I remember when Tiger signed that first deal with Nike, that $40 million deal, and it was, everybody looked at it like, well, that's retirement money, and he spent all that money on psychologists, coaches, and strength coaches, and he put together a team, and that's the first time that I remember anyone doing that. He put together a major team with all that money.
I was going to say, Payne Stewart did that with Dick Koop, which was a sports psychologist initially, one of the first ones out there.
But Tiger had like 12 people.
Well, I was going to say, it started with one.
Yeah.
And then it went to a nutritionist, and then the
champion. I was impressed with that, you know, because I thought, oh, he got his $40 million, now you just go out and play golf. And
well, you know, here's something that's happened in the vernacular, too. You know, it used to be you'd interview a tour pro after he won a tournament or something, and he would say, I did this and I did that and this, that, and the other. It's all we now. It's like a team event in itself. Always talk about we.
I'll tell you what. I have to tell you, as an old school guy, I cringe at that. I don't like that. It's like the Formula One drivers. You know, we did this and we did that. You know, I just, for some reason... John, and maybe I'm wrong, it just kind of offends me a little bit.
Well, it's inclusive, though. I mean, at least they're not. I'm not arguing with you, but they're probably thinking you want to respect your team because everybody else is doing it, but you're the one that's hitting the shots. And
the team plays a very important part, especially even in Formula One. That's what I'm sort of going to. But still, it just seems a little politically correct.
That's all it is. I agree.
If you were playing in a tournament and you won the tournament, Mike would be sounding like NASCAR right now. It'd be like, I'd like to thank the Sea Dog, Ice Pick, Mick Ultra, Budweiser, Burke's 19th Hole Clubhouse team in this victory.
If Mike ever won anything, he'd have to thank a whole bunch of people.
Exactly. I don't have to worry about that, do I?
I was talking about Jack and Tiger.
I don't have to worry about that, do I, fellas? The team concept. But I tell you what, when they lose, you know, they've got to accept all that. But
they lose, nobody's blaming the nutritionist. They're blaming the golfer, looking at, you know, choking or whatever. I mean,
Adam Shank.
And it's just me. I know it's personal, but I get offended by that wee thing, you know.
Yeah, I was saying, Jordan Spieth is big time on his wee thing, and we did this. Fitness guy, nutritionalist, you know, just all the above.
If I'm the caddy and I'm a very good caddy, and he's saying wee, and I just missed a 3-foot putt, I go, we did not do that.
You did that.
Hey, but you know, Bill. Bill, I'm sure you probably did this. Bill, I'm pretty sure you did this with your teams, but I know when I coached high school and college golf, I brought sport psychologists in to talk to the players a little bit to make sure that they were focusing on the way they were thinking, you know, not worrying about their technique, but just try to, you know, get them to focus on playing the game and being able to use some of the mental techniques it takes to, you know, to shoot lower scores and play better golf.
I said, we've been fortunate over Deckard because we had access to Joe Corella, who worked with the Bucks and works with the Magic, and he's got one Super Bowl ring that I don't, so I'm not going to question what he's doing.
Is he an Eckerd grad?
He is not, but he worked there as a psychologist and then became the golf coach before I was there.
Really? Makes for a nice excuse, though, you know. I was fine, but my team got the yips, and I missed that putt. I was cool.
Yeah, you got
my nutritionist got the yips, and now I'm back a stroke.
Well, I laugh at these, and that's why we need to get the growler on Lynn Strickler next week. I laugh at some of these pros that are blaming it on the caddy. Now, you ultimately make the decision. If you don't want the input from the caddy, your option to override them, right? And then you turn around, and those kind of guys are punks.
Unless they give you the wrong information. Unless that you turn to the caddy.
Yeah.
Do I take a right here? And he goes, no, take a left. You know, then he's got a job to do.
I agree with that perspective.
There's a lot of caddies that are, you know, don't input anything into the players, but nowadays you have so much information that the caddies have to.
Joe and Bones, guys like that, they have a way of delivering the information to their respective golfer. I think. I mean, he's on.
Let me pull it this out. Then I'm not saying this is Justin Thomas's problem right now, but Bones is caddying
for him. His
dad. And I can tell you that when Bones caddy for Phil Mickelson, that Phil Mickelson could operate in that environment. They would look at everything which way from Sunday before they'd hit a golf shot. But sometimes JT seems to be more of a natural player than a mechanical player. And I don't know if that was been a factor in a slump this year or not.
Well, I like the gut feel guys, you know. It's got any other sport. I'm so sick and tired of analytics, and you're out there on the freaking course, and you're overthinking it.
I'm shocked that you're old school, Mike.
Yeah, well, I didn't even know what analytics stood for when they first started talking about it in sport.
That's like, before computers.
Yeah, analytics. What the hell is that? Yeah, well, the Tampa Bay Rays are run by analytics. Is that the guy's last name?
Hey, but I can tell you, though, analytics sometimes can really help the average golfer. There's a guy named Lou Stagner. We've had him on our John Rager report, and he's a stats guy out there everywhere. And he comes up with some interesting stats that can help the average golfer, talking about how the average tour pro from like 100 yards in doesn't hit it within 10 feet, but more than 20% of the time or something. Those kind of stats where, as the average golfer, you look at it and go, well, you know what, you can't try to play like the tour pros. You see the spectacular shots on the Sunday, but you didn't see the guys missing the cut on Friday. And so stats can have a lot to do with it, but at the tour level, maybe they get a little too detailed when it comes to that. Just hit the ball and hope for the best.
There's no doubt, though, that analytics for, you know, it's like Mike just talked about the Rays. For a team that doesn't have the big budget and everything like that, but if you're, you know, if you're at the top of your game, you may not need them. And as much as I hate them, they really help the average person.
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
I mean, I agree with you, John. I mean,
I'm not the average person because I certainly can't figure them out.
Oh, you need double.
Hey, here's the future. Here's the future happening. 10 years from now, you probably have a computer on a pull cart walking behind the tour pro out there, and it'll be all artificial intelligence deciding what to do.
As long as Patty's got the computer with it, I'll go.
Hey,
what do I do here, Patty?
We only got 5 minutes, real quick. Okay, so we were talking about On the Tee Florida and some association with Rory McIlroy, and I'm going to go back in this. You know, my buddy to my right, he's not going to like this, but Iowan, Gene Elliott, who we had on, and very respected
amateur.
He's
won Iowa.
He's won the British, and we had him on about 5-6 weeks ago. If you remember that conversation,
yes,
his parents Rory McIlroy's parents live next to Gene and his lovely bride down in Venice in Florida. And he said that they're just the nicest family in the world, and so is Rory McIlroy. So that's our on the tee Florida tie. And I had to bring in the corn to it as well, my man.
Somehow we got Venice, and somehow we got Iowa into Venice, because we know Rory's never been to Iowa.
He may have. Did he?
Why would he ever go to Iowa?
He probably played in the John Deere Classic.
I would doubt that heavily.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice try.
Idiots out wandering around.
Is there a major that's ever been played in Iowa?
Aimlessly. Idiots out wandering aimlessly. I've changed it now.
Hey, yeah. U.S. Senior Open has been played in Des Moines.
I'm talking about for a regular tour.
1999 U.S. Senior Open.
No. That Rory would have played.
I know. No, there's not. The Waterloo Open.
No, that's not quite the major.
The Amanda's with Joe Gargiola.
Wow.
Now that's going way back. Joe in his checkered pants. He was checkered pants before John Daly ever thought about it. Hey, actually, Daly's still back out there at it. You know, he didn't play well, but at least he's ventured away from Clearwater.
God bless him.
Yeah, God bless him is right. Bravo, actually, on him. All right, John, anything before we wind things down here? We got about 3 minutes.
Well, we always should talk about the first 19-hole clubhouse and our golf simulators and the leagues that we have ongoing right now on Monday nights. We have a website out there getting ready to update it with a bunch of new stuff, including our Monday night golf and football shots and squares. And again, you can either sign up in advance or you just show up and root for your favorite team. So every week, just like when you have Rays baseball across the street, you have a different team every week and different set of folks that come in there. I know the St. Louis folks were pretty wild the other night, but if you go to onthetfloridagolf.com, we've got a website out there. Plus, we're on all the social media platforms out there, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and X now, formerly Twitter. And we're a golf show that's not only just about having a good time and bantering about with wisdom with Tom and Bill and Patty and yourself and Carrie, but also we do a lot of things that get you involved right with us, and you can even come to our live broadcast and mess around and hit some balls on the simulator and have some fun. So with that, onthetfloridagolf.com, come visit our website and keep abreast. You can even sign up for a free e-membership, and you get in drawings for Rays tickets and Rowdy's tickets and all kinds of swag, as we call it out there.
Well, we'll be talking tomorrow, you and I. We got some plans for Mondays. Of course, Bill Butner, great to have him back in the house. We'll be talking the lessons when you're ready to rock and roll up here on one of the two simulators. I know some people that are already excited and interested in having you given some lessons.
I hate to rehash this, but I do miss Patty here and giving her lessons.
You
miss giving her lessons. Bill's a hands-on guy, kind of guy.
You couldn't let the show wind down without getting that. And you had to drink water today versus the ice pick Champa Bay that is so delicious. And I'll make sure you get those next week, my man.
Bill, the stimulator.
Yeah, we got two stimulators here. Yes. Well, guys, I appreciate you coming down. We're going to be rocking and rolling. There's a lot of great golf to be talking about. Ryder Cup next week. We'll get Lynn Strickler on and get some. The rest of the story is saying he likes to give them on Curtis Strain, Greg Norman, Chrissy Everett. He's got some great material and content. We'll get him on next week as well, John.
Fantastic. I love to hear his stories. Pretty cool. And too bad he's at the baseball game today, but I think he's available just about any time for On the Tee Florida.
All right, gentlemen. So from the Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, 19th Hole Clubhouse, I'm Mike Rickard for John Rager, Gary McNally, Tom Gribben, Bill Butner, Joe Bedreau, and Matt on the controls. Thanks for listening to On the Tee Florida. And as always, God bless you, God bless America, and remember to keep it in the short grass and hit them straight.